Okay, so welcome and welcome back. I would be remiss if I didn't start with a mazel tov to Mrs. Honig there, who has a new grandson. So special mazel tov to the entire Honig family and to the entire Kastner family. So I would be remiss if I didn't start there. That's a special connect the ABC Simcha at many, many levels. Just to quickly review, as I like to begin with what we've spoken about the last 2 weeks. So very, very briefly, we began this entire series by trying to think a little bit about the context of Ish HaYashar Be'enav Ya'aseh, when people were really mostly, and sadly, for themselves and operating with their own self-interest in mind. And to think a little bit about Ruth's heroism, and we're at the very heart of that heroism today, specifically in the context of Vayihi Bimei Shvod HaShoftim, Ish HaYashar Be'enav Ya'aseh, and all of a sudden this woman, who we're going to, again, get into the very heart of it today, is able to put other interests in front of her own, to really achieve something very remarkable, objectively remarkable, and especially remarkable in that context. That's really what we spoke about for the most part 2 weeks ago. Last week, what we tried to discuss was something of a contrast between Ruth and Orpah, right? And to review it, and I reprinted the psukim here, when Naomi decides that her time in Moab, a very tragic time, she's lost her husband, she's lost both of her sons, she's lost a very significant portion of the wealth that she started with, so very tragic situation, hard to imagine anything even comparably tragic, let alone as tragic as what Naomi went through. So the text tells us, Shmuel HaNavi, the author of Sefer Ruth, as we know from the Gemara, tells us that she was accompanied by her daughters-in-law, by Ruth and Orpah. But unlike Yehuda, that we spoke about last week, in Sefer Bereishis, who keeps Tamar waiting under false pretenses for a very long time, he says, yes, Tamar, my two older sons died, Er and Onan, parallel to Machlon and Chilion dying, but if you just wait around, Ad ki yigdal sheila v'ni, until my third son will be old enough to marry you, everything will work out. And as we spoke about last week, Rashi says it really wasn't honest. He was being disingenuous. He had no intention of helping Tamar start her own family. But Yehuda didn't want to have to be honest and forthright. In contrast to all of that, we saw that Naomi is saying, don't come with me. I appreciate it so much. They're crying together. They're hugging and kissing each other. It's a moment of great emotion. But don't do this. It would be unwise. You're being unfair to yourselves. You have no future back in the land of Israel. There's no possibility that you will be able to build a family. And upon hearing this, Orpah, who again, very sincerely, that was the position we took last week, quoted from the Gemara in Masachas Sota, that for every tear that Orpah cried, she was given a descendant who became a gibor. There's a midrash that says for every step that she took, she was rewarded in escorting her mother-in-law. But Orpah turns around, she kisses her mother-in-law. The midrash that I represented for you, I'll show it to you in just a few moments, says that this kiss was one of the most genuine moments in all of Tanakh, of the kiss between Orpah and her mother-in-law when she says goodbye. Orpah, I don't think we should demean her, does what almost everybody, I would say 99% plus of people would do in that situation, which is to think about the future, to think about the possibility that she would like to have her own family, she would like to have children, she would like to be able to build a life for herself. And yet, despite the rationality of Orpah's approach, we concluded with the words, Virus Dav Kaba, that Ruth simply cleaved to Naomi. There was no way that she could imagine herself being separated. And we spoke about that word, Devekus, being a very special word in the Torah and a very special word in Tanakh. The first time it comes up, as we spoke about, was in the context of marriage. Al kein ya'azov ish et aviv et imo. The person will leave from his father and mother, v'davak bi'ishto, and to form a single unit with his own wife. It's used in the context of our relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Uvo Sidbach, that we're supposed to try to cleave with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The point that we ended off with was just reminding ourselves, this is a very important idea, reminding ourselves that, of course, that Dveikus is something that's very hard to achieve when you're talking about it in spiritual terms. What does it mean, Chazal asked, that we could actually cleave to Hashem? Hashem has no physical essence. And so we spoke about Chazal's answer to that question, that to go through Talmidei Chachamim, to go through people that one perceives of as religious paragons, religiously inspiring, hopefully through that process to aspire to cleave to Hashem Himself. And we tried to make a parallel argument that that's essentially what was going on for Ruth. That Ruth saw something, Naomi represented something very special to her, and she could not imagine tearing herself away from that. Okay, so that's really where we had left things off, and it's with that that I wanted to begin to cover some new material today, and really to go through the most beautiful psukim in the entire Sefer. So if you turn the pages for a second, the first page again, I just reprinted some of the sources that we looked at, and some additional material about the moment where Ruth and Orpah diverge, and they go on different paths. So if you just skip ahead to the seventh source, which is where the new material begins. So Naomi turns to Rus, who's the only one left standing with her. Vatomer, and Naomi says, Hine shava yivimteich, your sister-in-law has returned, el ama ve'el eloheha. She's returned to her nation, and by extension, to the God of that nation. You see, she's returned. She's gone back, not just geographically to Moab. They're standing there on the border. She's gone back, not just geographically, but culturally as well. She's going to return to Moab, to the gods of Moab, to the life that she had before. Shuvi acharei yivimteich. Don't follow me, Naomi says to Ruth. Follow her. That's your future. Return to your people and to your people's gods and to that lifestyle. That's where you'll have a future. Vatomer Rus, al tifgi'ivi. That's shoresh, pei gimel ayin, to be pogeya. The Malbim explains, the Malbim is Rav Meir Leibush ben Yechiel Michel Vissen, lived from 1809 to 1879. He was really one of the greatest rabbis of his generation. He was a rabbi in about 20 different places for various reasons. He was always trying to fight and stand up for principle, which usually meant he had to find a new job, unfortunately. We'll talk a little bit more than we have in the past about the Malbim. So the Malbim is very close to my heart, not because I aspire to have 20 different jobs, I certainly don't, but actually, on a somewhat personal note, it's a funny story. A few years ago, 3 years ago or so, I was giving a series in Megillas Esther, and I'd just become engaged to my wife at that time, so she decided to come sit in on one of the shiurim, so that was fine with me. It happened to be on Megillas Esther. And afterwards, I gave my approach, which was to use as I think you've seen the last few weeks, the text and some Gemaras and Midrashim, and she was just shaking her head. So I said, Chaya, you didn't like this year. She said, you didn't even mention the Malbim once. So I didn't know that about her, that she was such a big fan of the Malbim. But of course, I couldn't risk it. So I never read so much Malbim in my life. I went home that night, I read the entire Malbim on Megillas Esther. And so I came back the next week, the whole shiur was the Malbim. So she was happy with that. So I mentioned the Malbim a lot today. So I guess it's in her zechus that I'm now making sure to read the Malbims on all the things that I cover. So the Malbim points out something very important about the word to be pogeya. So when Rus says al tifgi'ibi, it has multiple layers of meaning. Of course, we know very sadly that when we talk about a pigua in Israel, that means an attack. To be pogea something is to assault it. Okay. Now there's a related meaning that to be pogea in a person is often to beg or to have in entreaty with them. That's why, let's say, when it comes to Yaakov Avinu, he's running away from his brother Esav, and he's heading in the direction of Charan. Vayetze Yaakov mi Bereshava, vayilech Charana. So the Torah says, vayivga b'makom. So vayivga literally means that he encountered, or he happened to chance upon a place, which is the third meaning of pogea, which is simply to meet a person. But the Gemara says that this is actually the source that Yaakov davened at tefillah. This is actually the first time that anybody davened Mariv. Yaakov was the pioneer of tefillat arvit, because to be pogea Hashem is literally to make a very deep request of a Kadosh Baruch Hu, vayivka. So here, Rus means at least two things, right? Al tifke ibi, when you tell me to leave, that's like an assault. That's like an attack on me. And of course, the other meaning here is that you're making this deeply personal request. But it's the first interpretation that I'm most focused on, is that Rus doesn't just take this as Naomi trying to talk some sense into her, but it's painful for her to listen to. Al tifki'i bi le'ozveich, to leave you, and lashuv me'acharayich. You might think it's somewhat redundant. Le'ozveich, to leave you, lashuv me'acharayich. But I'd like to suggest that Rus has two very different ideas in mind here. First of all, I can't bear to leave you as a person. Rus has developed an incredible attachment, which, as we know, can't be taken for granted in life. Just because somebody is one's mother-in-law, we would all hope that it worked out the way this all the time. But I think we know that this is unique. So, le'ozveich, to leave you as a person, but lashuv me'acharayich, to return from this place that I stand with you, meaning to go back to the life that I had before. Neither of those possibilities are imaginable. As a matter of fact, if you take a look just for a second to the ninth source, the Medrash picks up on this double language of le'ozveich lashuv me'acharayich. So the Medrash puts this line into Ruth's mouth, which I think is very telling. The Medrash says, mikol makom, this is what Ruth was telling Naomi, in any event, da'ati lehisgayer, I've made up my mind, I'm converting to Judaism. So now the only question is, are you going to help me? If you make me leave you, le'ozveich, don't think, lashuv me'acharayich, don't think that I'm going to turn my back on what you've exposed me to. Because what I see refracted through who you are, the culture that you've exposed me to, I can't bring myself to do what Orpah just did, which is to return to my nation and its gods and to the culture that I was raised in. Mikol makom dasi lehisgayer, mutav al yadeich velo al yadei acheres. It would be better if it was you to whom I feel a personal attachment, as opposed to me having to start all over again from ground zero, but I've made up my mind. So what one finds here is that Rus has what I would call not a single attachment, but really a dual attachment. La'azveich, she's personally attached to Naomi, what we spoke about last week, virus dav kaba, but there's an additional layer to this. Lashuv me'acharayich, we're now beginning to learn that Rus has developed a great respect for, and even a love for, something that Naomi represents. Not just Naomi as a person, but something that she represents to Rus. And that's really what we're going to talk about today, is Rus's ability to discern within Naomi, through this relationship, that the culture from which Naomi has emerged is an exalted culture, is a culture that she wants to be a part of, irrespective of the personal consequences to her. Right? Nobody's arguing that her prospects for marriage, for children, for financial security are better in Israel. All of those things are certainly better in Moab. And it was ultimately that calculus that led Orpah back. But Rus's agenda has changed. Her personal attachment to her mother-in-law, and also what her mother-in-law represents to her, what stands just on the other side of that river Jordan, al tifgi'i bi, don't hurt me, to say le'ozveich, to separate from you personally, lashuv me'acharayich, to go back to where I came from. Going back for me, Rosh says, is unimaginable. So back to the pasuk, "Vatomer Rosh al tifkei bi la'azveich lashuv me'acharayich, ki el asher telchi eleich, wherever you walk, I will walk, uva asher talini alin, where you will lie down for the night, so I will as well. Ameich ami velohayich Elohai. Your people is my people, and your God is my God." Now here, we have to just return for a moment to a pasuk that we studied together last week to appreciate the critical transition in the pasuk. If you take a look back on the first page, this is the first source. Initially, Rus and Orpah are walking with Naomi, and Naomi tells her two daughters-in-law at the time, "This is a bad idea, it's unreasonable, it's unwise." So if you take a look, just pasuk tes, "Yitain Hashem lachem, may God reward you, umitzena menucha, may you all find security and peace and happiness, isha beis isha, ultimately a husband, vatishak lahen, and she kisses them, vatisena kolan vatifkena, and they cry together. Vatomarna la, and Rus and Orpah say together to their mother-in-law, ki itach nashuv le'ameich, we will return with you, le'ameich, to your people." Now based on this pasuk, Rashi and Malbim have a little bit of a disagreement as to what exactly Rus and Orpah had in mind. So Rashi says in the second source, you don't have to read it inside, let's pick out a phrase, "V'achshav hein ba'os lihisgayir," that this was the moment when Rus and Orpah first raised the possibility of conversion. "Ki itach nashuv la'ameich." But the Malbim, again, there's the Malbim, says in the third source, "Ki itach nashuv la'ameich, da'aseinu lihisha'er bein b'nei ameich, ve'adayin lo amra le'lohayich." Nobody said anything about conversion. Nobody said anything about a God. All they said is, "Ki itach nashuv la'ameich, we'll come live amongst your people." "Dehainu lihisgayer, rak la'ameich ratzah lomar lagur bein b'nei ameich." That initially, all Orpah and Rus meant when they said, "Ki itach nashuv la'ameich," means, "We're going to go with you. We can't leave you as a person. So we'll live wherever you live. We'll be neighbors. We'll live in the same house. Okay, you're of course Jewish. We're not. But we love each other. We have this relationship. We have so much history together. How can we separate as people?" But when Rus comes back, now let's go back to the pasuk that we just studied together. Rus does not say, "Ameich ami nikuda. Ameich ami Velohayich Elohai. My ambition is much broader. It's not just a question of personal separation. It's a question of whether or not that which you represent, the lifestyle and the religious values that you represent, Ameich Ami Velohayich Elohai. This represents a transition point and a new moment in Rus's aspiration, where she recognizes that it's not just Naomi personally, but as I said just a moment ago, that which Naomi represents. I saw a few questions, so let's pause here. Yes?
But isn't it significant in the first pasuk, and it says Amech, but it doesn't say Arzeich? That if it was just a matter of physical living, it would say Arzeich.
Right, so that's a very good point. I think what we have to assume is that the Arzeich is implied, because the entire context of the discussion is that Naomi is returning to the land of Israel. So that may be implied, but when the term Ameich is used, that may connote both the people and the land in which they live. But to go back a number of weeks ago, when we spoke about the Rambam derived the prohibition of leaving Israel, even under duress, exactly from this situation. And the Rambam does rule, you know, whatever this should mean in the practical sense, Asur Latzeis Me'eretz Yisrael, that one isn't supposed to actually leave the land itself. So there's no doubt that there's an implication here, not just for the people, but for the land as well. So the observation is really a very good one. Yes?
Why didn't they convert in
That's a very good question. So to answer that question, we're going to need really the rest of the shiur to try to figure out, would that have been a possibility? Would that have been a possibility? Or perhaps, is there something about this journey back right now and the specific timing that for the first time raises the possibility of conversion? See, what everybody is in agreement about is that Machlon and Chilion at the time did not marry Jewish women. Wasn't important to them. Remember, we talked about those unintended consequences. Elimelech leaves and he's thinking that he's going to be there for a short time. Lagur b'shtei moav, we spoke about that term, to be a ger. He didn't think he was ever going to assimilate. Then the next generation, they marry Nashimo Avios. There's no discussion whatsoever of conversion. So I'm going to try to make an argument. So that's an excellent, excellent point. I'm going to try to make an argument about why it was that the timing of conversion may have had to been exactly right now. There's something about the question of motivation that I'd like to try to argue for in just a few moments. Okay, so we know that Rus has articulated this very powerful commitment to not just her mother-in-law, but the religion of her mother-in-law, Ameich Ami Velohayech Elohai. So back to Pasuk Yud Zayin. Ba'asher tamusi amus, if you die, I will die alongside you. Vishame kaver, and I'll be buried right there next to you. Ko ya'aseh Hashem li, v'cho yosif, so should God do to me, and more, ki hamaves yafrid beini uveinech. Literally, the only thing that could possibly separate us is death, and not even death, as we know, our burial, Ruth says, should be together. Vatera, and Naomi sees, but not just sees in the physical sense, it's not like she visualized something, but when we have that term, lirot, in the Torah, it means to understand. For example, when the Pasuk says, Vayar Yaakov ki yeshever b'mitzrayim, that Yaakov saw that there was food in Egypt, he didn't see stalks of grain, he understood that if you go to Egypt, that there would be food there to sustain the family. Vatera, Naomi doesn't see something physical, it's not like somebody held up a sign, like, you're not going to win this argument, just listen to her. Vatera, she understood. She internalized the message, ki mis'ametzes hi l'aleches ita, that Rus was absolutely determined. I'm going to spend a lot of time on that word, mit'ametzet, from the shoresh amitz. Absolutely determined, v'techdal v'daber eleha, and Naomi goes away. Naomi says, okay, if this is going to be the way it is, then that's the way it is. So in this incredibly moving dialogue where Rus utters those timeless words, Ameich Ami Velokayech Elokai, we find in truth the very foundation from Chazal's point of view of really what conversion is. Now it would be easy to imagine that conversion simply meant adopting certain beliefs and the actions that come along with that. Kabbalas mitzvos, that's all you need to do. So this is the Jewish religion, and you could adopt the Jewish religion. It doesn't matter if you live in Israel, United States of America, Afghanistan, Pluto. You can convert. And yet, the formula that Rus uses is something completely different. And the implications are far-reaching. It's not merely Elokayach Elokai, with everything that that entails. Your God is my God, and I accept the mitzvos. But before you can talk in terms of religion or theology itself, one has to talk about Ameich Ami. So if you just turn the page, to the 10th source, and my hope is to be able to go as deep as we can into these sources. The Gemara in Masachas Bechoros explains that when you're dealing with conversion, goy shabal lekabel divrei Torah, so if somebody wants to convert, to accept upon himself divrei Torah, chutz mi davar echad, but the person makes a condition, a caveat, says, I don't want to accept that one mitzvah. So not bad, 612. We should all, you know, be fulfilling 612. So the Gemara shocks us by saying, Ein mekablen osa. No conversion. He has to, she has to, be willing in principle to accept everything. Now, what this means in practical halachic terms is not my discussion for now, but suffice it to be said, what this really means in practical terms, not that a person has to be ready to do everything all at once, but that there should be no philosophical opposition. A person shouldn't say, I'm an opponent of Shabbos, I'm an opponent of the laws of Kashrus, even if we understand that there is going to be a process involved. Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Yehuda Omer, afilu dikduk echad midivrei sofrim. Forget about Torah laws, but even rabbinic laws, even dinim derabbanan, that a person in principle has to be willing to accept the entire corpus of Taryag Mitzvos and all of the dinim derabbanan that have accrued over the years. And this is the presentation of the Gemara in Masachas Bechot. So if you take a look at the next source, Chazal appreciated that in every phrase that Rus uttered, what she was really doing was reflecting a deep and unwavering commitment to this precise phenomenon. You'll remember she said, Ba'asher tolchi eleich, ba'asher talini alin, ba'asher tamusi amus, v'sham ekaver, ameich ami, v'lokaich lokaich. Six different expressions. So the Gemara, in its own version of this conversation between Rus and Naomi, says something remarkable. Amrala, Naomi says to Rus, you sure you want to do this? Asur lan tchom Shabbos. You can only walk so far outside of the community on Shabbos. Rabbinically, you can't walk farther than 2,000 amos. So Rus says, no problem. Ba'asher tolchi eleich. Wherever you walk, I walk. Wherever you don't walk, I don't walk. So she says, Asr lan yichud, that there are certain laws that govern who can be in private spaces with whom. So Ruth says, no problem, Basher talini alin, wherever you sleep, I sleep, I'll stick with you. I won't have any problems with that. Mifagdinan sheish meos ushloshes rei mitzvos, we have tariq mitzvos. So Ruth says, no problem, amechami, whatever your nation does, I'm doing. Asr lan avodas kochavim, we can't worship idolatry. No problem. Elokai ech elokai. Arba misos nimsur lebes, and some mitzvos are so severe that it's even punished by death, capital punishment from the Beit Din. So Rus says, Basher tamusi amos, I accept those also. Beis kvarim nimsur lebes, that those four penalties are divided into subcategories of two and two. Rus says, Fisham ekaver, I accept that kavura as well. In other words, what Chazal are reading into this story is not just that Rus had a personal commitment to Naomi, which she certainly did, la'azveich, but that Rus at this very moment, and not earlier, was appreciating that Naomi's culture came along with very demanding, very rigorous, very precise requirements, and that in her very beautiful speech, Basher Talini Alin, Basher Talchi Elech, Amechami Elokai Echa Elokai, Basher Tamusi Amud Shamek Haver, all six of those expressions relate to different elements of Kabbalah Satorah, exactly the way that we read in the Gemara in Bechoros, the entire corpus. But it's not just that from Rus's perspective, that Rus is the paradigm, what I like to call in this year, the mother of converts, because Naomi becomes the paradigm of what it means to deal with converts. So the Gemara says, Ein marbin alav, ve'ein medaktikin alav. It is the responsibility of the person who's dealing with the prospective convert that once they demonstrate their seriousness, that we take them at their word. Ein marbin alav, one doesn't excessively inquire, and one, Ein medaktikin alav, one does not demand anything further. Amar Rabbi Elazar, how do we know this? Maybe we should continue to scrutinize. Maybe we should continue to investigate. Rabbi Elazar says it's simple. Have you read Megillas Rus? Maikra, what's the pasuk that this is all based on? Dichsiv, Vateirek himis ametzes hi lalechet ita. When Naomi saw that amitzut, to which we'll return, Vatechdalada berilah, that was good enough. And literally, to this very day, to 2016, that is our paradigm. If somebody comes along, male or female, and demonstrates what Rus demonstrates, the commitment with all of its precision, as we just elaborated, we accept that. Vatechdal daberi laha. Enough really is enough. And Ruth and Naomi is the very paradigm of what conversion is all about. It set the template that we follow to this very day. Yes?
But the source of the person's interest in converting them is irrelevant. So you think of it in modern times, when a man and woman, a young man and woman, whatever, are dating, one is not Jewish.
Right.
And they decide to convert, and people may look askance and say, well, is this why you want to convert? Because you want to be, and they, you know, no, it's the same thing as Ruth and Naomi. You know, on some level, she was very attached to Naomi and whatever Naomi represented. And you can use that analogy today for men and women or whoever, you know,
right,
for dating. And as long as the commitment's there, right? Am I right?
So I was hoping somebody would ask that question. And I have to put it with a question that was raised before by Zadie. And I think the answer is one and the same. Well, it just take it about 3 or 4 more minutes till we can see that entirely clearly. But I think this is why we need the contrast that I developed with Orpah so carefully. So I was gonna handle this point last, but I'm gonna come back. I'll do it right now. Then we'll just switch over. No. This is perfect. Why was it so important? If this is truly the paradigm for our entire understanding of conversion, why was it so important that we went so carefully through the distinctions between Ruth and Orpah and the whole conversation that Naomi had with them? What is that in fact clarifying? And then we'll see it in the Gemara itself. What that was essentially clarifying was, what is in your practical self-interest and what is your spiritual aspiration? See, what Orpah represents as a character, she, as we discussed, her intent was, ki itaf nashuv amech. I'm personally attached to you, Naomi. There's no questioning Orpah's personal attachment to her mother-in-law. But Naomi says to her, you have to think practically. Think about self-interest. Don't you want X, Y, and Z, family life? Yas Hashem imachem, mitzena minucha isha beis isha. All practicality, all rationality leads you back to Moab. And nobody denies that. But what makes Ruth the true paradigm is she's willing to throw all of that to the wind. Ameich ami velokayech alokai. See, to my mind, and this is why it has to happen now. See, if she converted back in Moab, so then what do you have to ask? Why was she converting, presumably? Because, okay, so this man, he happens to be Jewish. They're not that observant anymore, but the family once was. You understand, the grandparents, you know, what are you really intimate? So Ruth and Orpah, if they converted then, that would have been the quality of the conversion. But now, you have the perfect test case. It's like a laboratory scenario. All practicality pushes her back to Moab. The only thing that can drive her forward into Israel is a clear sense of both ameich ami ve'elokayech elokai. So to me, this is the ideal case of conversion, where the motivation is not self-interest, but on the contrary, desire to draw close towards the people of Israel and the God of Israel. Let's look in the Gemara. Rabbi Soloveitchik pointed this out. It's just so beautiful. There's something incredible about the process that we go through when we're dealing with a prospective convert, and it's based exactly on Megillas Rus. Something which otherwise that would be incredibly peculiar. Take a look at the 12th source. Tanu Rabbanan. Ger shebal hisgayer bezman hazeh. To this very day, the Gemara says, somebody comes with conversion on their minds. O mimlo, so we say, ma ro'isa shebasal hisgayer. Why do you want to convert? Iyata yodeya? Don't you know? She Yisrael bizman hazeh divuyim, dechufim, sechufim, miturafim, v'yisurin bayin aleihem. In short, they're downtrodden, they're persecuted, they're oppressed, they're impoverished, they're rejected, they're alone in the world. Im omer, so if the person says, yes, I know all of that, yodeya ani, ve'eini kedai, and I'm not even ro'oi to join such a people, mekablin oso miyad. Mikablin oso miyad, we accept them on the spot. No waiting list, no we're checking your references. Mikablin oso miyad. Now, you could ask a simple question. What does this have to do with religion? talk to them about Shabbos, Kashrus, the holidays, Avodah Zarah, Mezuzah, Tefillah, nothing. So what point is the Gemara making? That before you can talk about Elokai, Echalokai, what do you have to talk about? Why are you doing this? Is it for yourself? Because you think that there's something to gain? That's the first thing that you're looking for. That's what Naomi and Ruth were talking about. Don't you recognize that your self-interest is back in Moab? And Naomi says, make the right decision for yourself. Go back. Al tifki ibila zveich lashuv me'achrayach. It's unimaginable. Ameich ami. The first thing that Ruth says, and that's why it's the first thing we talk about with a convert, before any of the religious aspects, before Elokai Echalokai, the first thing that Ruth establishes, Ameich ami. Yes?
It took Ruth the prospect of coming to Eretz Israel to convert. Doesn't that make the case that conversion should be in Israel?
You know, yes and no. At that time in Jewish history, the entire Jewish people, the entire Jewish nation was concentrated in Israel. So in good faith to say, Ameich Ami, during the times of the Shoftim, remember this is before Churban Bayit Rishon, this is before the destruction of the Temple, this is even before the 10 tribes were exiled. There was no Jewish community of any substance outside of the land of Israel. So to be able to say Ameich Ami at that time, indeed, really did have to, and this is going back to the question before, the nation and the land really are intertwined. But if you can say in good conscience, Ameich Ami, without actually needing the geography, it may not be entirely the same, but I think that would change things. So I think that the historical reality in that sense has shifted. So in any event, what you see clearly here from the Gemara is following the template of Rus, establishing the proper motivation and putting Ameich Ami before Elokai Echalokai. So the very next paragraph says, okay, but that's not the end of the story. That's just Ameich Ami. Now, Modiano, so Mitzas Mitzvas Kalos, Umitzas Mitzvas Chamuros, you tell them about the mitzvos, and then, what's the first specific mitzvah that you get to? This will sound awfully strange, so if I took a vote, should be Shabbos, Kashrus, Davening maybe, you could all pick. What none of you would say, Umodiano so Avon, Leket, Shichicha, and Peya. So what do you talk about right away?
It's like social justice.
It is social justice. Making sure that the poor people have what to eat in the fields. Peya is the corner. Shichacha are the things that are forgotten behind. Leket are the things that are dropped. Who lived off Leket, Shichacha, and Peya? We haven't gotten there yet, but that's Megillas Rus. That's what it's about. That's how she's going to survive. The first thing you tell a prospective convert basically is saying, oh, do you know the story? Have you heard of Ruth? That's the first thing you say. And it's not an accident we say that, because the very concept of Leket Shechcha and Peya, Tzedakah, we think speaks to the Jewish value system. Have you heard that these things are required? And that's an amazing idea. The idea of charitability and kindness and chesed being, you know, a number one in terms of once you start to get specific. Okay? And then you talk about eating kosher, then you talk about Shabbos, etc., etc. Okay. So there's so much more to say within this Gemara. The Rambam, which we're not going to be able to get to inside, expands this considerably to develop just how much of a commitment to Am Yisrael the prospective convert has to demonstrate, even before we begin to ask them about their religious motivation. Again, all following the framework of Ameich Ami, Ve'elokai Echalokai. I said before that I would deal with one final thing, which is the usage of the term ometz. Vateira ki mis ametzas hilalachas ita, that Naomi saw that Ruth was absolutely determined. Now, we already spoke about how Naomi's recognition of Ruth's determination becomes the paradigm for how we're supposed to deal with prospective converts. That we say a person demonstrates the commitment and the integrity, that is when we say enough really is enough, vatechdal ledaber eleha. But here, to me, the word is the most critical thing. The term ometz, that the Malbim explains, is not the same as the term koach or chazak. For example, we have in the Torah, in the context of Moshe setting up Yehoshua's leadership, he says, Chazak ve'emach. So what is the difference? So the Rambam says, Chazak is to be strong, to have strength of character. But emach is not being strong once or twice, but it's resilience, it's grit. Chazak is to be strong, but what happens after you're strong and somebody knocks you down? Then the question is ve'emach. So it's not just enough for a person to demonstrate strength, but what we really need to see, Vatera Naomi saw ki mis ametzes hi, that she would not be deterred, she would not be denied. So when Moshe says to Yehoshua, Chazak ve'emats, what Moshe is saying is don't think that it's going to be enough to be strong once. They're going to be terrible setbacks. There's going to be 36 of your soldiers are going to be killed. There's going to be Acham taken from Yericho, ve'emats. If you're going to be able to succeed, it's only through resilience. Rus is accepted by Naomi, not because she said once, ki itach nashuv amech, Orpah leaves after that, but she saw that there was this unbreakable commitment, this resilience, this imut. Now, I'd like to try to take this idea just half a step further with your permission. What's so striking to me is that the term ometz hardly ever comes up in the Torah, besides what I just mentioned in terms of Moshe Yehoshua. It's only used one other time in a different context. And it's not used in any location, as to my knowledge, from Yehoshua to this point. Which really means, now we're able to go back to the beginning. The entire question of Vayhi Bimei Shvod HaShoftim is now Yehoshua is dead. Yehoshua was the man of Chazak ve'ematz, but there was nobody to replace him. There was nobody who had that midah. There was nobody who had that mila of resilience and being able to be strong enough and resilient enough on behalf of the Jewish people to provide them direction. And we go through all of the possible shoftim and all of them have their moment, but all of them pass away from the scene and none of them are described with this term. So is it possible that what Shmuel HaNavi is really suggesting by applying Yehoshua's term to Rus is that whereas none of the Shoftim were legitimate successors to Yehoshua, Rus is the answer. Vayhi b'mei shvod ha-shoftim, in a time of ish kol ha-yashar b'inav yaseh, when everybody was out for himself or herself, and everybody did what was in their own immediate self-interest, we've waited from Yehoshua until Rus to find somebody who knew about self-sacrifice, who knew about putting other people first, who knew that life wasn't only about doing what's convenient for you, but looking beyond that, Vatera ki mis ametz es hi. Naomi appreciated in Rus something exquisite, was something extremely rare. And what that was this quality that we last found with Yehoshua before we got into this mess. The whole question of Yimei Shvod HaShoftim is who is going to be the leader from which redemption will come. We found our answer, Vatera ki mis ametz es hi. Of course, it wasn't any of the men that succeeded Yehoshua, but it was the most unlikely of sources. Not just a woman instead of a man, but a woman from Moab. You know, Chazal have this beautiful expression, Harbe shluchim lamakom, that God has no shortage of messengers. And his messengers are not the messengers that you would think of. Vatera ki mis ametz es hi, Naomi saw something exquisite and rare in her daughter-in-law, this quality of imutz halev, resilience, that she would not be deterred, she would not be denied, but asher tamusi amus, if you die, I die with you, visham ekaver, ki amaves yafrid beni uveneich, pure words of determination have never been spoken. And what we look for in every door, when we ask the question if somebody is really going to join, we try to the very best of our limited ability to discern that same quality of imutz halev. And we need it in two respects. First and foremost, ameich ami, a commitment to join the Jewish people, which means the going eventually will get rough, and we need to know that they're going to be willing to stick it out. That's the first question we ask the Ger. And then we turn to that second set of questions. Aser lan tchum Shabbos, aser lan yichud, we have 613 mitzvahs. There's the issue of Bodhisattva there, Arba Miso's Besdin. And if the answer across the board is Bashir Talini Alin, Bashir Tilchi Ale, Chame Chame Lokai Chalokai, Bashir Tamusi Amusi, you see that resilience, issue after issue, commitment after commitment, determination after determination. Russ had both of those commitments, Chame Chame Lokai Chalokai, then you know that it's legitimate. When Naomi saw the sincerity, the depth of the resilience, she recognized this is perfectly legitimate, and then they would walk together, cross the Yarden, and enter Eretz Yisrael. We'll pick it up there next week. Yeah, so that will be the last one. That will be the last Boa's experiment. He figures that solution out from.